And welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. And what will be our last podcast for a little while? It's the NFL is about to take a nap. The Colts finished their mandatory minicamp, so the veterans are probably out of town by now. We're taping this on Friday at 1:48. They were off the field right around this time yesterday. I would assume that most of the veterans left town almost immediately, unless they live here. The Colts do have some on-field work next week with the rookies. The younger players are still around. But other than that, we are headed into really the only dead spot left on the NFL schedule. I am taking off quite a bit of time here before the season starts. Nate's going to be taking off quite a bit of time. So we're going to kind of wrap up. This might be a long one because as we kind of wrap up the offseason and then leave it for you guys. But we the offseason's over. We got to see three practices in a row. It's hard. You want to draw conclusions from these practices, but it's mostly 7-on-7 work. We never really saw a real pass rush or a real block from an offensive lineman or defensive lineman by design to avoid injury for those players. So it's not the same as seeing training camp. You're mostly seeing, you know, 7-on-7 stuff. Still, a lot of interesting things from this week of camp. I think most notably the Darius Leonard situation. There was some confusion over that. I want to start there. The assumption was that Darius Leonard and Frank Reich said different things, or that Darius Leonard to Pat McAfee and Frank Reich said different things. But if you look at Reich's answer, that's actually not the way it went down. I'll try to explain this as concisely as possible. Frank Reich said they were not the same injury. Okay. Leonard had surgery on the ankle last year to what Leonard has called a cleanup. They have decided he has not needed a second surgery. What McAfee says does not contradict that, because he said it was a functional issue, not an injury issue. So there wouldn't be anything to repair in the ankle if there's no structural issue there. The problem was that the ankle was not getting back to full strength and functioning the way it was supposed to, which is something that can be caused by a nerve in the back, which is what the back surgery repaired. And Reich said that yesterday. His expectation is that now that the back is healed, it's going to help his rehab get over the hump in the other way. So, well, I understand why some people maybe read it the other way. The best way I can explain it is two separate injuries, but the second injury affected the recovery of the first injury.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think they said different things. I mean, like any NFL coach, I think Reich could have been more clear about it, but that's just not how NFL coaches really are with injuries. But it has been a weird situation for us to monitor. It was good just to hear a little bit of clarity on what it was, because it felt very strange that, you know, if it was an ankle that was still the problem this much later after the season. But at the same time, there, you know, so I think, you know, I know Darius described it to Pat McAfee as a good thing that he got this procedure and it'll make it better. And that's obviously the hope. But it's a little concerning, too, anytime there's back issues. You know, I often have heard, like, you never hear anyone talk about how they used to have back issues. So while he did have a procedure and hopefully went well, like it will be something to monitor probably for the rest of his time in the NFL. And, you know, Quentin Nelson has had a little bit with the back as well. Those are obviously the two cornerstone players that they've extended Nelson, or they extended Darius. They're going to extend Quentin Nelson here soon. And you just hope that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't go anywhere other than that, because those two guys obviously are great players. They're also the two that, to me, in my brief time here, have been the kind of example setters for playing through stuff when you're not 100%. Both of them had bad ankle issues last year, played through it, kind of set that tone for both sides of the ball to do the same thing. So, you know, you need them to actually be able to be out there. And there's some situations that could make that harder than others. So, it's been weird to just not have Darius around at all, though. You know, like he was, when we were in the OTAs, he was there, but he was kind of like, just taking a knee off to the side, and then he wasn't anywhere around this week. It's just different with how much of a domineering presence he is on and off the field. But I guess it gave some shine to some other guys. And, you know, and one guy that I noticed that had a nice few days out there for as much as you can do in this, which was Bobby Okereke. You know, let him get a look at some of the undrafted rookies as well. But Okereke just, I thought, really flashed in some of those pass coverage situations. Just really looked like he knew where to be at all times, and was really running routes for guys where the only times they even threw at him were kind of so late and down that a normal quarterback in a game would have been actually sacked by a pass rush. So I say that all to suggest that, like, I know last year he had a big training camp, so I don't know that it really means anything other than it was a moment for him to kind of take charge as by far the senior linebacker of that, you know, at least of the one starting linebacker who was out there, and having a chance to kind of be that guy and kind of help install this from this new defense under Gus Bradley from the middle of it. So that is one, I guess, slight positive that came from Darius not being able to be out there.
Well, I think with Okereke, the hope is that he plays more like the Okereke that played down the back half of the schedule and not the one that started out. You know, he was pretty open last year about the fact that he didn't feel like he played physical enough early in the season, that he had to up his physicality in the starting role. He ended up playing more snaps than anybody on the defense, but he definitely improved as the season went along. And the aggression and the physicality at the point of attack was better. So if he can carry that over, I think his season looks a lot different if it's the whole season as opposed to, you know, after probably the first seven or eight games, he was a little bit, I guess, out of sync, but wasn't playing quite. So we'll see what he does. I'm interested to see the linebackers in this defense, because both of those positions have, you can make a lot of plays in Gus Bradley's defense. EJ Speed is the guy who's plays the weak side in place of Leonard. So if for some reason Leonard's injury lingers longer than the sum of training camp that they believe it's going to be, Speed would be that guy. We haven't gotten to see a lot of EJ Speed on defense, really, because Leonard has played for the most part, and last year when Anthony Walker wasn't around to shift over and have him and Okereke play together, Leonard played all but one game. Speed played well against Cardinals, and he's got a lot of, this is where it gets hard with EJ, because you want to say he's got a lot of speed in coverage, but it sounds like you're making a pun. He's fast. It helps him in coverage. We just haven't seen a lot of him so far, and we'll find out. I mean, one of the things about missing training camp time that I always think about is just like, training camp is like 6 weeks. It's like 6 or 7 weeks. And so when they say missing training camp time, like Leonard missed 2 weeks of training camp last year, and he still was there around for 4 weeks. So, we'll find out how much time they missed. I do like that we have some information. I know that there's a lot of frustration out there with the way the Colts talk about injuries, but for Colts fans who don't know how other teams handle it, if you cover Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh or probably Dennis Allen in New Orleans, this is the way it used to be with Sean Payton, several other places, if you ask about injuries at this time of the year, they'll just say, we don't talk about them at this point of the year. So having any information is better than you'd get in some places.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots are famous for that too, and I feel like it's still sort of in Kenny Moore's reflexive part of his brain, because he didn't want to talk about why he was out for a couple days here in minicamp either. So, yeah, we get what we get this time of the year. There's no injury reports till we get actually into the season, and they have to list any body part that's actually been looked at by a doctor in any way, and you know, then you know whether guys are the levels they're practicing at. So we'll have to see, but yeah, this isn't the worst time to go through this, because they do have this, you know, 6 week break and then sort of a 6 week ramp up to the season. So there is a gap here. And obviously we know some players need training camp more than others. Does Darius Leonard really need training camp? I guess he does in the sense of learning a new defense. So that is something, but not as much as some other guys might need it. You know, I just think about some guys like Michael Strawn wasn't out there at all this week. And again, if he can come back and be in training camp, maybe it doesn't matter, but that's those kind of guys, those younger players who really, really need that on-field work. This is where it matters for them. And I, on the flip side, I think that's why, you know, that's why Frank Reich was so adamant about having an offseason program for his passing game, not only a new quarterback, but all the young receivers, they're trying to catch up to it. And some guys did well in those settings. I mean, I thought that Desmond Patman, I was talking to him and wrote a story on him. He drafted in 2020 and has never had a spring to be able to do any of this. So not only does he have a spring, but he gets to go out there and work with Reggie Wayne and Matt Ryan, like these two new resources who've been to so many places that players like Patman can only kind of dream of. And Nick Foles, you had him into the mix too. And it's like Patman was joking, those are the guys like he grew up watching and idolizing just as like a kid in elementary school. Now they're kind of his resources to kind of learn this stuff. So this time of year, what really matters is, I shouldn't say it's the only thing that matters, but it matters to get those players on the field and those players in situations where they're learning and growing. And that really was my biggest takeaway from this week is what we already knew was going to be the case, but just how much the passing game needed this time of year and just how noticeable some things were, how noticeable the consistent ball placement and accuracy of Matt Ryan was. The way that I really was keying in on when they would just run routes like in individuals or into the end zone, he almost has like something to say to each receiver he throws to about how he wants them to run that route. And that's kind of the way he described this, is this time he's trying to learn them and learn what their best routes are. And then they're going to try a little tweak on it to see if they can maximize that specific route. He doesn't want to run a full route tree for every player if he doesn't feel like that's what they're good at. So a lot of this was him learning these players, and it's fresh and it's new, not only to have it, but to have a quarterback who thinks in that way. And I know Marcus Brady had a line that kind of stood out to me on that front where he said, like, Matt Ryan putting in that sort of effort guy by guy for every guy on the roster, whether it's Michael Pittman Jr. or, you know, whether it's a guy that is an undrafted rookie wide receiver, it shows them how much he cares about this and that he cares about each one of them, and that it's not just, you know, he's been able to approach this without a whole lot of ego of, you know, I'm Matt Ryan and you step up to my game. And rather, it's he's trying to meet them where they are. And it's just been fun and impressive to watch. And all the things that they've been saying about in the past two months or so, I feel like that got ramped up in this portion, talking to players. And just they were kind of over the moon by just the way he approached this week.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing, even in routes on air. You know, they were doing something in the red zone the second day. I taped some of it and kind of put it on Twitter, just to show like routes on air, because it's the only thing you can really show from that. They don't want to, once you get into 7-on-7, that's the kind of stuff that other teams can look at and determine formations and stuff like that. So they don't allow you to film during that. But I had to delete a bunch of the stuff I hit record on, because I thought that they would just keep, you know, as many throws as possible, but there would be pauses where like Mike and Foles and Ryan would pause and they'd be discussing something about what they wanted where they were on the other side, other fields. So it's not like I could hear them, but they would discuss something for 30 seconds or so before the thing go, before they made the next throw. And that's not something you always see. That's not something you always see when teams are doing routes on air. Routes on air kind of end up looking like layup lines a lot. And it was interesting. It was an interesting thing to note. I don't know. We'll have to see if that keeps going on in training camp. But it was just interesting to see how much they were talking about it and talking through what routes they were going to run, how they were going to throw, which personnel were going to come up to do it. Because I you know, you could see the effects of all that. Like sometimes somebody would wait back and then somebody else would step in. All that for routes on air, like I said, just a little bit different than what you've seen in the past. And I think some of it obviously is new quarterback and a new system. Like when I covered Drew Brees in New Orleans, there wasn't a lot of that because Drew Brees knew that system backwards, forwards, up and down. That's a place where you come in and you kind of have to do what they've done, because that's been the offense. You know, this one's being tailored to Ryan. So there's a little more discussion that has to go on. But it was an interesting thing to watch them doing that, even in something as simple as routes on air.
Yeah, well, that's what's interesting is they are tailoring an offense to Ryan. It's a real mesh point of Frank Reich's playbook and what Matt Ryan is good at. And so, you know, I talked to Nyheim Hines yesterday for a while and have a story coming out on Monday, and I thought he was just incredibly insightful about this shift at quarterback and the way it's going to change their offense. And what he kept explaining, though, is he said this is the playbook we've run for 4 years now as far as what his role is and how he fits into it. And he said the difference is that now we have a quarterback who's been to places we haven't been, who's done some things we haven't done. This is sort of like they're trying to take this to the advanced level, but they're bringing back some stuff that kind of went away last year when they had a much, much different quarterback stylistically and everything else. And the main thing that I'm seeing with that is the stuff pre-snap, the motion, and then also, you know, mostly with Hines, and then also like what they do out of the slot. And the two guys that just seem to be just on a different level of working with Ryan already are Hines and Paris Campbell. And those are the two guys I think will work a lot out of the slot, which is going to be kind of the route that comes back. Is if you look at Matt Ryan last year in the intermediate part of the field, between the numbers, he that's where he attempted 74% of his intermediate passes. That's 30% higher than the guy who was here last year. So that, you know, tight ends, I'm sure, will be some part of that, but it's really going to be the slot. And it'll be interesting to see them take this into obviously training camp and into the games where they have a defense that's actually going to try and do something against it. But it's in this kind of setting, it was just totally unfair for them to kind of motion Hines out. Then he'd look back, or Paris Campbell, look back at Matt Ryan. He would do that where he'd tell them to run their route a certain way based on who was up against them. And it was just a nice mix of, you know, very consistent throws across the middle of the field in the intermediate game. And then deep passes, they worked off of that. And Hines yesterday, I mean, it was 2 days ago, caught just this gorgeous go route down the right sideline where he lined up motion to the outside receiver spot and just outran Brandon Faison. And while I was talking to Hines, Mike Mitchell comes over and asked him why he had to give his young safeties such a hard time in this camp. Like they were just like the connection that was just on a different level was mostly Ryan and Hines and then also Ryan and Campbell. So that's how it should look right now. But that's, you know, that whole passing game disappeared last year where Paris Campbell was only out there for the Jacksonville game, didn't catch a pass. Hines really barely touched the ball at all in the second half down the stretch. And so to go from what we last saw of this passing game to any kind of hope, I think has to be encouraging.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought with Campbell was that last year with Wentz at the helm before he got hurt, he was mostly a down the field target for them. And that's never really been the way he was envisioned in this offense. It's not when we saw him at full strength, which admittedly has not happened a ton, but like the Pittsburgh game, his rookie year, the season opener against Jacksonville the next year, he was a guy that they got the ball in all kinds of different situations. You know, short throws, quick outs, drags over the middle, those mesh crossers that Reich loves to run against man coverage, was stuff that he did. They didn't really do that last year with Wentz, which I think is probably stylistic more than anything, in terms of what Wentz did. And all that stuff was back on display in both mini camp and the OTAs before that. You know, there was the one OTA that Ryan attempted 24 passes and Campbell caught 8 of them. And like that was a real wide variety of stuff that he was making catches on. A lot of stuff was shorter, but you know, that's the kind of chain moving stuff that they didn't always have last season. And it's sort of the realization of what they wanted to do with Campbell. The caveat with Campbell, well, like, listen, we understand. Everybody understands the caveat with Campbell is that he has to stay healthy. But I don't have a crystal ball on that. No one has a crystal ball on that right now. So just speaking specifically what we saw on the field, you know, this is more, it looked more like what you expect what they wanted to do with Campbell when he was drafted in 2020 before some of these injuries happened. Last year's role was a little weird.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's like, he's different than these other guys we're talking about. Obviously, Darius can't even be out there in practice, but like Julian Blackman is shocking us how he's back out there. But it is, there are some limitations to it. There's no limitations to anything Paris is doing right now. Again, the obvious caveat is we'll see how long that lasts. But he looks fresh, explosive, fast, healthy. Like this is not a guy coming back from something that's holding him up in any way. And so it's let him hit the ground running. And yeah, I think he's like he was drafted to be what Frank Reich has often had out of the slot. These guys that work just intermediate game yak type of players, and the whole yak game and the whole intermediate part of the passing game disappeared under Wentz. It's stuff that Ryan's always thrived with. But the main thing is like anybody you talk to about Matt Ryan, this is what Colts players are learning now. And I think they're excited is that he is all about working with them. And I mean that like whatever their skill set is, whatever their traits are, he's like the most natural point guard style of quarterback that will get, it's all about finding out the mismatches before the snap and getting the ball to them in their situations where they can thrive and be the best versions of themselves. And that's why guys are so motivated right now is I think all these skill players feel like if they can be on the field, they can have a career year. And you know, even guys who've had success in the past. I mean, like Hines was saying, like this feels like playing with Phillip Rivers and Andrew Luck again. And those are years he caught 63 passes each. But now the difference is that Hines is in his fifth year. They've got a very set, you know, he's got Jonathan Taylor, which that was kind of interesting as he said, like the big misconception that he's found is when they drafted Taylor, he had all these friends and acquaintances asking him like, you know, are you nervous about that? Is it going to eat into your workload? He said, Jonathan Taylor should not change anything for me because he does not consider himself a running back. He says, I'm a football player. And I kind of gave him a look and he goes, well, name me another running back who returns punts. Because he's like, you know, Alvin Kamara doesn't do it anymore. Christian McCaffrey has done it. Like his whole persona is to be this positionless player. And he says, like, you know, I'm here when Jonathan Taylor needs a breather, then I'll run the ball. I'll keep it so that we can have a semblance of a running game when he has to be out for a drive or two. But the way he wants to play is he wants to just be this gadget player. And if you have that and you give it to Matt Ryan, you can see what it becomes. A Pro Bowl type player like Cordarrelle Patterson was last year for the Falcons. So that they're looking, they're watching Cordarrelle's film and they're finding ways to incorporate a lot of that. But then Matt Ryan also said, I've never had a player quite like Nyheim Hines, who's quite that, you know, who really takes that receiving ability to another level since he's played receiver in college and kind of has a little bit more of a downfield element. Potentially, we've never really seen. We saw more of that in this camp, and so it'll be just interesting to see how that develops. But to me, it feels obviously it's theoretical and it's easy to look good right now. But for Hines and Campbell, I just feel like Matt Ryan's the kind of quarterback they've always needed to play with. It's a much more like what they have with Phillip Rivers, except I think the big difference here is that Matt Ryan can throw it down the field a little bit better than Rivers could, and that just kind of ups the upside that much more.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Hines and his workload, whether it's going up or down all offseason. And it's very confusing to me because his workload hasn't really, like his role has never really changed. If the Colts throw the ball more, Nyheim Hines plays more. And if they don't throw the ball as much, Nyheim Hines plays a little bit less. And it averages out to around 33% of the snaps. And it's more effective if they have somebody who can throw the running back. And so when they sign a running back, when they have Jonathan Taylor, all of that stuff, you throw all that stuff together, it doesn't really affect Nyheim Hines' role. Nyheim Hines' role is his own role. And we've seen it for 4 years. The only thing that keeps him off the field is if they have to play the way they did against, you know, New England or Buffalo, where they're running it on every snap.
Yeah, that's exactly what Hines said. He said, this is the same role I've had for 4 years now. So I said, so you're not a slot receiver? He said, if they need me to be, I can be. But the plan is for him to be what he's been for 4 years. And he said, this is a role that goes back. He's like, this role predates me. This is Darren Sproles' role in Philadelphia that they've taken. And that's why they liked Hines so much. That's why they extended him last year. And it just totally disappeared down the stretch last year. It's one of the biggest reasons why they went with this change is they weren't used. You know, there was so much talk. The narrative around the Colts is they don't have enough weapons. And the Colts felt like we didn't use the weapons we do have. And Hines is one of those. So they're just kind of bringing some of that stuff back. And they're just, Yeah, I won't tease the whole thing because I hope you guys will check out the story on Hines. But he was, let's say, pretty blunt on certain things, on what needed to change, what had to change, what has changed. And just one thing I asked him, I said, you know, you play with a different quarterback every year, but you're trying to maintain the same role. So how hard or easy is that? And he said it all comes down to whether the quarterback is accurate. So he's very happy with Matt Ryan right now, and he loves the passes he's thrown to him, and it's looking good. And obviously we'll see how it carries over into when they face defenders. But I will say, like, these were settings where they are going up against oftentimes a first team defense, and I think what will be a pretty good defense, top 10, maybe top 5 defense, and they just had the upper hand in every single situation.
Yeah, the 7-on-7 is geared that way. It's one of the reasons that this will come up again in training camp when I'm doing observations and stuff. It's one of the reasons I don't usually watch it, just because it is geared towards the offense, especially veteran hyper accurate quarterbacks like Ryan. It's really, really hard to it's really, really hard for the defense to do some stuff. I think that probably the best training camp thing to watch for people who are going to come out there, just to kind of wet people's whistle a little bit for this, is every time Stephon Gilmore and Michael Pittman Jr. go up against each other. I think that's going to be really fun to watch in camp. There was a mini camp on Wednesday. There was a three play session. They kind of rotate in threes. So like Ryan gets three plays, then Foles gets three plays, then Ryan gets three plays, then Sam Ellinger gets three plays. And one little three play session, Ryan makes this great throw up in the air to Pittman, who goes up and catches it over everybody else with Gilmore in good coverage, but Ryan just put the ball way up there and Pittman went up and got it. And then two plays later, Gilmore undercuts the route and gets his hand on a ball that Ryan is trying to throw out in front of Pittman. I think the only interception Ryan threw, or maybe one of two. I think there was a deflected ball to JoJo Doman. I think there was a deflected ball that JoJo Doman picked off that was him.
Yeah. Bobby Carricade tipped that one.
But Gilmore undercuts it, gets his hand on it, and kind of bobbles it around and makes the catch as he's going to the ground with Pittman ripping at it the whole time. This is a really fun three-play thing to watch. And I would expect that Gilmore is probably going to have more off days than most people, just because that's what they've done with, you know, kind of established guys in their 30s since Reich's been here. So he'll probably have every third or fourth or whatever day off. But on the days that he's in there, when every time 5 lines up against 11, I think that's probably the highlight battle at training camp. Probably the easiest one to watch.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll just be fun to see more out of Gilmore, because that was probably the best play. That interception he had was the best play we saw in 3 days. But one of the only plays that I felt like Gilmore was really kind of full go on. I don't blame him at all. 40's had some tough injuries the past couple of years. And this is, like we said, this time's more for younger players. But he just wasn't full intensity. But it'll be good for Michael Pittman Jr. too, because what he's talking about is he believes he's a number one receiver, and he doesn't seem to like the narratives and the talk about him being a possession guy or a number two receiver. So, you know, he's trying to take it to that next level, and he's talked to me about his goals, which are a lot bigger than what he's done so far. So part of that's going to be a guy that starts to get that, you know, number one attention from a Stephon Gilmore of whatever team he's playing. And you know, if Gilmore, you know, the kind of leader he likes to be, is he's going to push those guys in camp to become that before the games arrive. So that'll be fun. The one I'm going to look to is that was fun this week. It'll be much more fun when they have contact, is the battle between Isaiah Rodgers and Brandon Faison, because I feel like that was a lot of why Gilmore kind of took it easy, was to let those two get even more reps. And if you notice the way that the Colts were doing things, they would often have those two, even with Gilmore out, though, they'd sometimes have those two on different teams or different, you know, they'd be like backups to each other so that they could come in and guard the exact same player. So like you'd see Isaiah cover Alec Pierce, you know, on an outside route on one play. The next play, Faison's doing the exact same thing. It's like this comparison. And it was interesting, like those two, I felt like, laid it out more than maybe any other player. It's like they kind of could feel that. And also, you know, it's also interesting that like they're so different, but they both have a different edge too. It's like Faison is the guy who's experienced not only overall, but in this defense. He's played for Ron Miles, the cornerback's coach, for Gus Bradley on two different teams. So he's got that edge of already knowing, you know, what he's looking at and what to do. Isaiah's started one game, so he hasn't. But what I noticed is Isaiah would call over a few different times. He'd call over Kenny Moore to talk through what they were watching out there. And Kenny's a guy he's always followed because they're, you know, smaller players, small school guys. And Kenny's hit his ceiling as a Pro Bowl player to the point where he's asked for a new contract. And so Isaiah has that bond with him in a way that Faison can't possibly as a new guy. So kind of how do they use that edge and where does it go? Be fascinating to watch because Faison's the guy who, you know, just dimension wise fits how they like to play. He's 6'2", he's physical, he's physically developed, he's 27. But the upside is so high on Isaiah because of his recovery speed. And I thought he was one of the best players out there, just the way he would catch up to really any player he was against, and not only catch up in coverage, but make plays on the ball. It's amazing how natural Isaiah is at catching up to the ball and give him a chance at interceptions. He had two last year that were like that against DeSean Jackson and Scotty Miller, where he caught it like a punt returner. He just has that natural feel to it. It adds some even more upside to his game. So the ideal scenario is that they're both players for this team, but I'll be really interested to see how that battle goes because that's like maybe the only spot that's up for grabs on this defense, starting spot. I mean, I guess you could say maybe Nick Cross versus Kari Willis could be another one. It's one of the safety spots. Kari's not been out there, yeah, so it's hard to say.
I think you're right. I think it might be corner. I mean, we don't know. Kari Willis was out with a personal matter.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen anything with that this summer. That one seems like it'd be more of a surprise, whereas Faison and Rogers, like we could all see that battle coming miles away. One of the other things to note about Isaiah talking to Kenny is that I did see him play in the nickel a little bit. I did see Isaiah Rogers play inside a little bit in these 3 days. And, you know, however they want to use that, you know, do they use him as Kenny's backup if Kenny gets hurt? Do they use it as we can get four corners on the field in a dime situation? Whatever they want to do there is interesting. Just about whatever they want to do there is interesting if they're going to play him inside a little bit. Because that was the original view for him defensively. So it's hard to think back to this now because Rodgers played so well at cornerback, outside cornerback last year. When he was drafted, the initial idea was we've got a kick returner, special teams player. We'll start him out in the nickel and see what he can do there, you know? And the way he's played outside has been a revelation. And sometimes that happens. It happened with Braden Smith. You draft a guy for one spot and they end up being really good in a spot you hadn't necessarily envisioned. But his speed, his quickness, his size kind of all fit in the slot too. And it's just interesting to see. Gus Bradley said that a lot of what they were doing with the secondary and linebackers, you kind of have to throw out everything you saw up front because they didn't do anything. Bradley said that flat out. But what they were doing was they were testing guys to see what they can do. And I'll be interested to see once we get to the regular season and training camp if we see Rodgers getting some more snaps inside. You know, is there a dime scenario where all four corners are on the field? They got a lot of safeties too, so you can do a dime scenario. They've got lots of options in the secondary with how they want to do sub packages. It'll be interesting to see just what they do there.
Yeah, you're right. You mentioned safety, and I think there are going to be some scenarios with three safeties, or at least there could be. Obviously, it depends on, you know, Kari coming back from his personal matter and Julian Blackman getting healthy. I mean, he's been out there. We just getting and staying healthy. But like Rodney McLeod is an interesting wrinkle to this. That's something they didn't have any depth at safety last year. Any guy that you wanted on the field or that they wanted on the field, you know, unless they had to put him out there. Rodney's a little different though. I mean, Rodney's started more than 120 games in this league. And if you can find situations where he's sort of a free, who feels almost like a free defender, where he's kind of just operating in a way where he can have eyes on the quarterback and play robber coverage. It could be an interesting little wrinkle. There's just more creative elements they can do with this defense, or at least that they're interested in doing than we saw under Matt Eberflus. And like one thing we saw yesterday that was, it was just fun to watch was the ways they were using Kwity Paye and Dio Odengbo, where they have them sort of like start out in like the, over the guard simulating a pressure, then they'd sort of run over and flip right back to the edge spot in the wide nine. Sometimes they'd flip from one side to the other. Just all this stuff that I think that, I mean, it didn't amount to that much because they don't actually go and hit the quarterback. It was more just a look and to get them.
No, they would take like one step, and they would take like one step, and you'd get real excited in your heart, and then they would stop, and you get real sad.
Exactly. But I mean, it's one of those things where like they can, those are the guys that they can be creative with because they have DeForest Buckner and Yannick Ngakoue rushing off one side, and those guys are like, you know what they are, and they're going to be already stressors on. Those are already guys that you have to think about double teaming, or you know, you think about applying your pass protecting running back to. So now, if you simulate a pressure like that, it just frees up Dio and Quiddy in ways where they don't have to necessarily win one on one or just beat even double teams at the tight end. That's where I think last year they just, Quiddy especially, just didn't really get the fairest shot at reaching a ceiling. He just, there's no help on the other side. And, you know, it's a rookie that's supposed to key your whole pass rush. This is a very different situation with Ngakoue here. And for Buckner too, is that his double teams, he had all more than everyone else out of Aaron Donald, didn't really go anywhere last year. This year, it's going to create one-on-ones for Ngakoue and maybe open up some of these creative pressures they can get from the other guys. But the pass rush is the one area that has to be just so much better. But the early indications of what they're willing to try are at least kind of fun.
Yeah, the look Nate's talking about essentially was a nose tackle and then two defensive ends lined up wider than they would be in a 3-4. Borderline wide nine-ish, but more like outside edge of the tackle. And then the guy just in a stand-up position, kind of roaming back and forth before the snap. That was fun. It's tough. This stuff, I will admit, this stuff this time of year is tough for me because I really like watching pass rush, and not getting to watch it is very sad for me. We didn't even really get like any chance. Like I understand why Yannick Ngakoue stayed away. I totally get it. Like, if you wanted to work your position,
he got way more done.
Yeah, if you wanted to work your position drills, you got way more done somewhere else than you would here on the field. And you know,
he was really doing like
different.
He was doing a lot of like sled training and working through sand and running with resistant bands and chains and what he called James Harrison style workouts, because he's like, look, I'm 246 pounds. Like, I got to maximize what I am here in a way. Because he has to, you know, he goes up against the biggest players on a football team, those offensive tackles. But so he got a lot more out of doing that Monday through Friday than anything he would have gotten out of OTAs. And that's what it was interesting. Like, when he wasn't here and we don't know him yet, it was, you're just kind of curious about what that's about. But having him explain it, I really feel like that guy is really, really hungry. Like, he realizes, like, He's been on five teams now. He's tried for long-term contracts, haven't gotten it. Been traded multiple times. Like, this is his chance to really lock in with a team that has a quarterback he can believe in, has a defense coordinator he trusts, has a defense around him that can kind of get to a top five level, and a culture that guys seem to like and a staff they like to play for. He's got to find a way to make this work in his mind. And so this is more than just, you know, he's one of the most consistent players who plays every game. And he's had between 8 to 12 sacks every year. But in his mind, this needs to be like his career year. He needs 13 sacks. He needs to become a guy that they look at and they go, we can't afford to lose this. If we have a top five defense and we lose Yannick Ngakoue, we're not going to have that anymore. And we're not going to be a Super Bowl contender. That's the way he's got to get them thinking. Because I think the way that the Colts are looking at it is they want to see what happens with Quiddy Pay and Dio Adangbo. Do they grow? Do they become guys that you want, two starters? Then maybe Ngakoue, you know, if he's too expensive. Ngakwe's got to just, in his mind, make it so that that's not even a conversation, that there is no replacing him. That's the mindset he's training with.
Yeah, there's several things that I don't feel like we have a whole lot to reveal on that are big questions going into training camp. You know, like, I can't tell you anything about Matt Pryor versus Bernard Raymond. I don't know anything. They didn't have to block anybody this week. You know, I don't have anything. Yeah, they were both on the field. That's what I can tell you.
And they're not hurt.
There were times when Raymond was the left tackle with the first team, and there were times that Pryor was the left tackle with the first team, and there were times that they played inside. That's all I got for you. And when I say play, I use that loosely. They lined up in a stance and came off of it.
The only thing I would say on Raymond is I unless I missed it, I didn't see him at right guard.
He did yesterday.
He did yesterday a little bit. Okay. Yeah. So we'll see how much they do in camp of that. But I still feel like the left tackle battle has not begun yet. And that's going to be the focus of it is obviously they really want him to be a left tackle before they even think about what they need at right guard.
Yeah. No. And the same thing goes with Pay and Odengbo. They were out there. I saw them run around and line up. And how those two top two picks from 2021 go, what kind of step they make in their second year is a big deal for this defense. If one or both of those guys take a big step, it's really big for this defense. But we don't have anything. They didn't really go after the passer in this camp. So some of this stuff that we're going to find out is stuff that you just have to wait for Grand Park. We're just going to have to wait for Grand Park to see what's going on. Don't necessarily have any answers now. The best answer in terms of anything that we saw was we asked Frank Reich about Ryan Kelly lining up at guard. He was like, no, that's not the plan.
They did a lot of that, though.
It was a really weird time of year. It was really confusing because Ryan Kelly's never played guard. So we thought enough to ask about it. And Reich was like, that's not the plan. We have people on certain fields and we're lining them up the way they're lining them up. So anything line of scrimmage is really, really tough to draw any conclusions. Well, I shouldn't say tough. It's impossible to draw any conclusions from because we didn't see them do anything.
Yeah, they did get a lot of work done in certain areas these past 3 days, but they did some weird stuff that I don't even know how to read into. That would be one of them. The other one is they kept every day they would run this end zone walkthrough essentially, where they just throw routes that the defender would not even walk toward, and they would take one fast step and then walk the whole way through it. So I don't know. It just feels it could be very walkthroughish at times. And so maybe some of that's just having a new quarterback and getting guys kind of in that mode a little bit. Really what I learned more this week than watching was just getting to talk to guys. Again, Joel helped me out by taking all the scrums with Frank Reich and the different guys there. And I got to kind of bounce around a little bit. So talking to Naheem Hines was, Yannick Ngakoue, Kwity Paye. That's where you just got a little bit more understanding of just kind of how they see this going, what they're trying to go at in training camp. And with Paye, one thing he mentioned I thought was interesting is he feels he said, my skill set leans more to the big end spot, but I have the speed to be a backup of the Leo. So, Ngakoue's never really missed any time, 2 games in his career, but there are still snaps where maybe he's not out there. They don't have Tyquan Lewis out there, so they do need a backup. And if anything were to happen to Ngakoue, really that Leo spot has been everything. So Paye in his mind is thinking he's trying to find a way to build his body into being that bigger end, but still maintain enough of the speed pass rush element to step in for Ngakoue if anything were to happen. And that's where he's talked about he expects them to run wide 9 on both sides of the field. For him, that makes it so that if he has to flip to the other role, it's not crap, you trained yourself to be a big end. What do you do now? So it just sets us up for things to watch in training camp is when they experiment more with that. Because I'm guessing Ngakoue too will be a guy who gets a few days off in training camp or occasionally a day off. And then it's go time for Paye and for Odengbo to kind of show these strides we've been waiting to see.
There's a couple things with him flipping over there. Number one, no defensive lineman is going to play all the snaps. Ngakoue played 72% for the Raiders. That's actually probably a little high for most guys. So I think that's part of it. And if Ben Banigu doesn't take a big step forward, they don't really have another natural backup at the Leo, because Tyquan Lewis is a big end type, sliding into defensive tackle. Dio Odengbo is a big tight, is a big defensive end type who slides into defensive tackle. Banigu is really the only one who kind of fits that that Leo role to as a backup to Ngakoue. So if Banigu really takes this defense and looks like something we haven't seen, then there's your backup. But if he doesn't, then on those snaps that Ngakoue's out, because no defensive lineman plays 100% of the snaps, someone's got to play there that you feel good about. And so, you know, maybe pays that guy. You have Odengbo to play big end. You have Lewis to play big end. You can move Pay over there and get more of those guys a breather and a rotation. It is one of the things with just trying to get him over there. That lack of a second Leo is, just given Ngakoue's durability, doesn't seem like it could be an issue. But if something ever happened to him, Pay really is going to probably have to do it. I mean, oh, yeah. Like I said, barring a Banigu breakout, but we haven't seen anything that indicates. So if we haven't even seen anything on the field so far that indicates that that's coming. Obviously, Banigu's relationship with the last coaching staff was bad, and it played a key role in why we haven't seen much. But at the same time, I think even a bad relationship with the coaching staff would have been overcome if a player was playing way over the top, given how much pass rush they needed last year. So Banigu is one that we have to see it before we assume anything. And there's a little bit of a depth issue there, I think. Well, whereas there's not at big end. They've got lots of options for that role. They can play a lot of different guys there and shift some of them into inside the rush on passing downs, all that kind of stuff. The Leo role is the one where Banigu's kind of got to take a big step forward just so they have depth there.
Yeah, that was the one surprise in the draft to me, was that they didn't draft sort of another Leo type. I don't know if they kept getting sniped on them. There were a couple guys I remember when I would put together the lists of best available, I really thought would be a good fit to be an Ngakoue backup who could, what a guy to learn from too in that role, but it just never worked out that way. So that is one concern we probably haven't talked enough about. And again, Ngakoue doesn't really miss games. So if he's what he's been, then it'll it probably won't even be a talking point at all. But again, anybody can get hurt in this league. And that's like what I feel like that's been like our talking point every time we're on here, is you can talk about Paris Campbell missing time and all this stuff, but guys are super durable until they're not durable. So it is something to consider. And this is where, like, the more I just think after talking to these guys and thinking through it this week, this is a big, big year for Kwity Paye. To show what he is long term, like it, because I just don't know that. Like last year, again, it was experimental. They're moving him from what was just such a weird role at Michigan to more of a pure pass rush role. But there was no way we were ever going to see the full element of it when they, you know, on the other side they had Al-Kadin Muhammad, and they just didn't really set him up to be a complimentary piece. He had to carry this edge rush in a way that was just over the head of a raw developing guy. And he's talked about he got frustrated with himself in that process down the stretch, lost some confidence. And this offseason, you know, just did a lot of different things, reading books and whatnot, in pass rushing clinics to try and get back to some of the dog that he felt like he lost down the stretch. And then he talked about how Ngakoue has been a guy that he's always modeled his game after. And that's, they've been texting a lot and trying to share info. And I mean, Ngakoue called himself a servant leader on this team. That's just the mentality he's in right now. He wants so badly to be a long-term guy here. And so that's what's kind of fun to watch, though, is that, like, you know, how much Pay takes a step forward, and Odengbo too could determine what they do with Ngakoue. And that's why I just go back to that. That's why he trains so hard in Florida. That's why he's coming forward all. In his mind, Ngakoue's got to play at a level that's so far above what any second-year player, whatever step they take, that it's like it's too far of a leap to catch up to him. But if they all take this leap, then all of a sudden this could be, it could be a pass rush that's just totally unlike what we saw last year, where it's, we know what Buckner is, we know what Ngakoue is. So if one of Pay or Odengbo becomes, you know, an above-average rusher on the other side, all of a sudden, that's three guys in a defense that likes to rush four and keep an extra safety in the box and has obviously a lot of talent in the secondary. So that's going to really determine the ceiling of this defense.
One other player that was interesting to me to watch this week, and it'll be really interesting for me to watch what they do with him in training camp, is Kylan Granson. Granson probably got more throws his way than any other tight end in the 3 days of minicamp we saw. He didn't always make the most of those. He had a really bad drop in the back of the end zone, wide open. Ryan put it right on him. He just had a bad drop. There was another play he dropped. But the flip side of that is he also did catch a lot of balls. There was one day he caught 5, according to my notes, in the 7-on-7 stuff. And he's kind of been forgotten about, shuffled to the side since they drafted 2 guys. But for the most part, with the first team, Woods and Ogletree haven't really done a lot with those, didn't do a lot with them this summer so far. And I'm just going to be interested to see what he turns into and what he does with this in the offense and training camp, because if the drops continue to be an issue, the determining factor for this team is, do you do enough to make up for it? They're fine living with some drop issues if somebody makes a lot of plays. And so that's a hard line to land on the right side of. We saw it with Eric Ebron, where he had a bunch of drops in 18, but he was responsible for 14 touchdowns. And so those drops didn't matter as much. And then the next year, with Jacoby Brissett, didn't have as many chances, wasn't producing as much. All of a sudden the drops matter a lot more. And it'll be interesting to see if it was 3 days. So like in camp, what'll happen in training camp is that we'll see 2 weeks. And so if someone has 2 drops over a 2-day period, that doesn't always mean anything in camp, because then if they catch everything for 2 weeks, you write it off. You can't do that here because we only had 3 days. But it'll be interesting to watch. Something to watch in training camp for me is just Granson got a lot of work with Ryan, a lot of middle of the field, short passing game type stuff here in this mini camp. I'm going to be interested to see how he does that and how, you know, Woods and Ogletree progress over the course of training camp. Because, I mean, they did some things, but I didn't feel like either of them did a lot.
Yeah, tight end group is going to be one of the most interesting to watch in camp for that reason. I don't know that I learned anything big about these guys other than kind of what you mentioned. I think Kylan Granson kind of has a little bit of a hump to get over. Just didn't really have much of a rookie year. You know, some of it not his fault, but it's there. And we just don't know what he can be. And didn't see anything this week that suggested it's really changed yet, but he has time to go. But it's like, you know, we talked about how much more they're going to throw in the middle of the field if it's 74% is the number that Matt Ryan completes in that area or attempts in that area. So people have asked me, like, well, that means the tight end, like, what's going to happen to the tight ends? And I don't know how that's going to shake out yet. I mean, the one thing we know is Mo Alie-Cox is going to play a lot. I don't know if that translates to a career year for him receiving or if it's like what he did with Phillip Rivers, which was around 400 yards. I don't know. Really, it comes down to how much, obviously, yeah, can Granson start to find some consistency as a receiver, but also just how much do they trust Drew Ogletree and Jelani Woods to be on the field and run the offense? It's hard to know in these settings. This is where it's still kind of vanilla. They're not, you know, there's no real physical element to what they're doing. But the edge that those two players have as rookies over what you normally see is how physical they are. They're two of the strongest tight ends in the class. That's one of the reasons that when I talked to the tight ends coach here, he mentioned that stood out to them at the Shrine Bowls when he got to work with those guys. And so they feel like there's a chance they could be on the field early. And if they are, they both have receiving ability. They have outrageous athleticism. Jelani Woods caught 8 touchdowns at Virginia. And Drew Ogletree is a former wide receiver who just converted tight end a couple of years ago. Those are even Ogletree could be a guy that maybe he's a slot option because he's played that position before and has downfield speed and another mismatched body. I just don't know how any of that's going to shake out yet. It's much easier to see that, like, you know, that Hines is going to have a big role. We know what Pittman Jr. is, and they drafted Alec Pierce with a very clear intent. And then Paris Campbell has just gotten so much work, and it seems like such an obvious fit for as long as he can stay out there. The tight ends, though, outside of Mo Alie playing a lot, I can't tell you what the breakdown's going to be in the passing game at all. Really, it's all up for grabs with that group. And that's also kind of what they want, right? It's like that spurs competition in training camp where the reward is potentially high, because if you you can earn this playing time. All of a sudden you play for, you know, a Frank Reich offense. It's always loved tight ends when they have them, and a quarterback with Matt Ryan, who has gotten so many good years out of tight ends, whether it's Tony Gonzalez or Austin Hooper or Kyle Pitts. You know, he's like, if you can be a great athlete and get in good spots, or even an average athlete like Austin Hooper, but you're reliable, like, you can produce some of the best seasons of your career. So it's going to be very motivating, and that's where the pressure's kind of on with guys like Granson.
Yeah, I'm spitballing it, just looking at it while we're talking, but there's roughly 1,500 snaps available. And how they divvy that up is the interesting question, and we don't know that yet. It's way too early to have any idea yet. You know, like, I keep thinking about, just as a cautionary tale for Colts fans who are, you know, I get it, it's June, you want as much information as possible, but there's a couple things that you always have to remember with minicamp. Like, number one, guys who've been in the system longer, in the offensive system longer, usually look better in the summer because they're not learning the offense. They know the offense. They're much less likely to make a mistake. So that's one caveat. And then the other caveat is that there's always stuff with the young guys that impresses now that maybe doesn't impress later. Like Kylan Granson at this time last year, people might not remember this, but Kylan Granson at this time last year, there was a lot of talk about how the Colts were over the moon at how advanced he was and how, like, he was far further ahead than they thought he was as a receiver. And then, I mean, some of it's a quarterback, some of it's him himself, but he didn't really end up being much of a factor in the regular season. So there's some stuff with the stuff that's going on now that you just don't know. And we'll find all that out after the break. We find all that out after the break. It's tough. I know NFL fans would love it for it to be a 24/7, 365 schedule, but I'm glad it's not.
We need a break. It'll be nice. We'll come back recharged, and then it's just like this crazy marathon through. You know, I think this team's going to the playoffs, and they may get multiple playoff games. They added a 17th game, as we all know. Like, we got a grind coming up, so we will have no shortage of things to discuss. And I mean, you even do a point where, like, when you get into training camp, every like 3 days, you just really start to learn stuff. Things develop, and like you said, some of it's fool's gold too. Like, there will be a guy that breaks out in camp that doesn't mean anything, but for certain things, we need to see training camp to get anywhere on. And tight end is, to me, one of the top positions for that. And then even some other things, like right now, just based on these practices, like I said, Isaiah Rodgers looks like he could be a Pro Bowl type cornerback. But how does that work when the pads come on and he has to play and press the way that this Seahawks style defense likes to play? And, you know, if he plays in the nickel, how does he actually handle run defense, you know, for a guy that's still kind of developing physically? So there's a lot of questions out there. And then, like, we hinted at it, but the what's going to be really fun is to see Bernard Raimann against Matt Pryor. And not only in those team settings, but in the one-on-one pass rush drills.
One-on-one pass rushing drills. That's actually my favorite thing to watch in training camp.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And we've got, like, now that they bring in, like, Yannick Ngakoue, like, that is such a fun test for those guys. Like, that guy is unbelievably fast around the edge. And we know what DeForest Buckner is and the challenges he puts on guys. So, like, there will be no lack of tests for those tackles. In fact, maybe that was a problem in recent years and what they've had on the edge and how much those guys can test them and how much the tackles can test the ends they get. There's no shortage of that this time around. So I'm looking forward to it a lot. And then even like the one-on-ones for receivers and DBs are fun too. I mean, I know that they're set up for the receiver, but there's still, you can still kind of see who can play and who can adjust. And it's one of those like pressures on moments. And I've seen rookies eaten up by those situations. And I've seen some that hit the ground running. I remember in Detroit, like Kenny Golladay in those settings, like instantly showed us like this guy's going to be a big, big time player. Cause he was physical and he was fast and he wasn't afraid of anything and he had ball skills. And then I've seen, like I said, guys get eaten up. So that's where like people, I've had a hard time judging guys like Alec Pierce because it feels very limited in what they're asking him to do with routes. But some of those situations, it's like when he goes up against a Stephon Gilmore or even an Isaiah Rodgers, who's got all the speed again and again in those one-on-one settings, you learn a lot more about those guys than we did this week.
Yeah, I thought Alec Pierce has looked pretty good. I thought there was some promise from him here in this setting. I mean, it's only five practices. I keep reminding myself of that. We didn't see all of it. But they're cautious reason for optimism. The one-on-one receivers versus DBs, I like that. I love that for the DBs. Like, that's when somebody has a good day as a DB, you really had a good day. Just because of what you said, like, it's set up for the receiver to win. The hard part with the Colts is that one-on-one success doesn't always transfer because of all the details and the adjustments and everything you have to make. Like, Mike Strawn last year in one-on-ones looked like a superstar. Like, just, he looked awesome in one-on-ones, but he was running a very specific route. And then once we got to the regular season, he couldn't make the adjustments, couldn't read the coverages. Still fun to watch. Still fun to watch in one-on-ones, but, like, that's something I'm going to be telling myself this year in one-on-ones was, like, man, Mike Strong looked really great in one-on-ones last year. It didn't translate to anything in that. But defensively, defensive back-wise, I think it's the opposite. I think because it's so shaded to the offense in terms of one-on-ones, if a defensive back has a really good time or a really bad time, I do think it's indicative. Like, Marvell Tell is a good example of somebody who everyone was interested in last year because he looked okay as a corner as a rookie, and he couldn't finish a one-on-one rep without a flag or getting beat last year. And then he didn't play at all. And that's why, you know? And so all that stuff is fun. All that stuff is good to watch. I'm excited for it, but I'm excited for it in 6 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I was just looking up today, like, the next week, it's supposed to be a high of 99 for like 4 days in a row. So I'm so glad we got through this week, or it was not that hot. Then we get to take our lull while it's hot. And then I'm sure it'll be scorching hot when we get out there. And that's just one of many reasons why vets don't really love training camp, they got to be in it.
This is what I always say. Camp is hot sometimes. If you're me and you used to cover training camp in New Orleans, it's never been like that. It's never been quite that bad.
Yeah, it's all comparison. Detroit and Chicago are a little different for
It's never been quite that bad. So especially, like, the Colts usually do most of their practices at 10 o'clock in the morning, so that helps. But 10 o'clock, the difference is in Indiana, 10 o'clock in the morning, that helps. In New Orleans, it doesn't help you at all.
That's true.
Already 95, and the dew point is 150.
Well, the other thing that you think about is, like, it's hot to us, but we're just standing there with notebooks on, and we're just, like, measly sports writers. Think about, like, some of the biggest players on this team and how much they sweat while they're the ones actually doing things.
Well, the Saints brought in a traveling refrigerated trailer, like a semi-trailer that was refrigerated the whole way, like you would use to transport refrigerated goods, and it would just sit there on the edge of the practice field. And when the line would, when the offensive line had time to have a break, they would just go sit in the refrigerated cooler.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's necessary. It's really necessary there. Like, you need that for them. But,
yeah, it could be a problem. Well, I even think about a guy like, this is random, but I think about a guy like Curtis Brooks, who pretty much fell in the draft after being one of the best players on one of the best defenses in the country because teams didn't think he could keep his weight up. And he's all talking about how motivated he is to do that. This is a tough time for that. Like, you're one of the biggest position groups on the team, and you're going out every day and just, like, sweating your life away. And even, like, anybody who's played high school football, at least when I was playing, you had to weigh in each day. And, like, if you drop below certain levels, they didn't let you practice. So it's, like, actually kind of a hard thing to balance your diet with just how much you burn on a day-to-day basis. And so we're kind of interesting for any guys like that are, you know, there's always some weight management going on there, either guys that need to add it, keep it, or guys who need to trim down a little bit. And, like, I don't know, I wonder, like Quiddy Pay is another guy I think about. I didn't get around to asking this specifically, but I think he's trying to bulk up to handle that big end role more than he could have last year. So, you know, what's that like in camp to actually handle that These are all the storylines that we'll get into, but it's at least meaningful stuff that we'll actually get to see day-to-day basis more than just kind of walking it 50%.
And with that, that's it for the Colts Cover 2 podcast for the 2022 spring. We will be back at some point in July. I don't know when yet. That is a problem for future Joel and future Nate. But for the moment, it's been fun covering what I think is probably the biggest overhaul this team has had in an offseason since I've been covering the team, at least at this point. I mean, obviously in 2019, there was something that happened in training camp that was a bigger deal. Franchise altering thing, but it's been a fun offseason. Hope the listeners have a good summer. I apologize for taking the break. I know our jobs are pretty pretty low stress, but even we need breaks. And so we'll be back here after the summer break with the Colts for the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson, and this has been Nate Atkins.